How's it going, everyone? Welcome back to Hashtag Spread the Sand Season 2. With me on this episode is Tanner Akel, men's beach soccer national team player for the United States. And in this episode, Tanner and I have a great conversation about his experience qualifying for the most recent Beach Soccer World Cup. And if you have a second, if you could give a rate and review for the podcast on whatever platform you're listening on, it helps the show out more than you know. And without further ado, Season 2, Episode 6 with Tanner Akel.
I went to like an ID camp and there was no spots left for goalkeeper. So I was like, well, I'm already here. So, and I always enjoyed playing outfield more just because it's kind of like a grass is always greener on the other side thing. And I guess I played well because the guy wanted me, and I went over there, and all of a sudden I was starting at center back, which is kind of funny because I played goalkeeper at Breakers my whole life.
Do you think that kind of helped you playing center back, like see more of the field type deal, or know what to look for and organize like the defense?
I definitely was good at communicating to the people in front of me. I took that away, and just the perspective on the field. You get to see everyone when you're playing goalkeeper, which is kind of interesting. And I think a lot of goalkeepers become coaches and center backs become coaches because they can see the field in that way.
Being a college athlete prior to getting into beach soccer, or, you know, they probably intertwined. How do you feel being a college athlete made you a better beach soccer player, or did it even?
Yeah, I feel like I'm saying what college didn't prepare me for beach soccer, but
sure, yeah.
I just feel like only a few people really understand, like, are on like the same page, or maybe it's just hard to get 11 people on the same exact page. Going out there with a goalie and three other guys, and if somebody's not on the same page, it's very frustrating for the people who are on the same page, and they're like, it's more of a distinct thing because there's fewer people.
Yeah, because if one person on your team isn't cooperating with the rest, that's a fifth of your team on a smaller
that's a good field, way to, yeah, exactly, surface. A fifth of your team is not cooperating, that's like two or three people on 11s.
So in a sense, like, if you're playing a 2-2, for instance, and you're not necessarily rotating, or one person's not rotating the way you need them to, that's one whole portion of the field in a sense that you're not effectively covering or effectively attacking.
Yeah, it. You can, as my good friend David Mondragon loves to say, you can hide in 11 aside. You can't hide in 5-on-5. If you're not a good player, or that's, I'm great, sorry, that's kind of mean, but if you don't understand what's going on, then it's going to be like really obvious, really fast.
Good teams will exploit you quick.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Because if you don't follow one man, then you're screwed. And everybody learns that really quick. And that's why it's so demoralizing for some people who come out to play, is that they just feel like they're so bad.
Because there's guys who are in a rhythm and, you know, have been playing with each other for a while, potentially, or at least just understand the game. So
yeah,
when they're
it's
in
an association
rhythm,
thing. Yeah. Exactly. Soccer's short for association. So
you most associated with Santa Cruz at first, right? Before y'all became NorCal?
Yeah. It was the group of players playing in Santa Cruz, going up to San Francisco to play with the Brazilians of the Bay, and we created NorCal. And so we went to Oceanside a few times. NorCal went to Virginia Beach a few times in the past, and then most recently we went as Santa Cruz to Virginia Beach. And we played against the national team. And we played pretty well, but unfortunately we're playing against one of our own teammates who was on the national team from Santa Cruz. And it was a pretty close game, but of course they had pretty high caliber players. So I think it was a really good platform for me to play in front of, who was it? I think Francis was coaching the team. Slowly worked my way into the team. Still working my way.
So you got pulled up to that camp. And then from the camp, I imagine it was a pool of players, and then you get selected for whatever upcoming competition there is to be.
Yeah, the camp I went to was actually to go to Hungary, but I guess they had already decided the roster before I got there. So you
got to the camp. It was just more
like a tryout. It was like a tryout for me, just to be in the pool.
Yeah, but then obviously they put you in their back pocket and then called you up later on. But that Hungary tournament exactly, would have been awesome to be a part of, type deal.
Yeah, I heard it was pretty fun. And honestly, I felt like I really killed it in that first camp. So that was pretty cool. And I got to meet Francis, like, truly for the first time. And then obviously he, like, recommended me to Eddie. So then I got called to each of the camps after that. And then it just went from there.
Teams that you generally see as the heavy hitters on the grass don't necessarily mean that they're the heavy hitters on the sand.
Yeah, exactly. So we're like, just to put things in perspective, we're playing against teams, all the teams in our group were in the top 10 in the world, and we're like not even in 20. We're like 25 or 30 or something like that at that point.
The World Cup qualifier is similar to the World Cup for, the traditional World Cup, in the sense that they take teams from each of the federations. So this was CONCACAF. All these teams that were playing in this were CONCACAF teams. BOE, and we can talk about this a little bit in a minute. BOE was a team that didn't do great. They didn't traditionally look like they had played beach soccer, to be completely honest. And they look like they took a beating throughout the tournament. But during the tournament, Tanner managed to score a nice bicycle kick that made it to ESPN. And one of the things that I messaged Tanner about after the game, I don't know if you remember this, Tanner, but I messaged you and I said, ESPN, like top 10, like this is crazy, this is sick. And the thing that Tanner told me, which if you're listening to this interview, you might not think he's humble, but he said immediately, yeah, it's cool, but it's great for the game. And I thought that was awesome. And then I actually met you and realized that you got a chip on your shoulder or something. But that's what he said, and he was stoked about it. And so we can kind of go through the tournament. It looked like in the group stage, y'all played BOE, won 14-1. You walked away with two goals, one of them being on ESPN. And then
that was actually my first goal.
Oh, your first goal.
First goal for the national team, and I get to go on ESPN top play, so that's pretty lucky.
So you're feeling stoked after that. And then we play Antigua, and they're a team that looked like they struggled too.
They were better, though. They were better than BOE. Winner.
Yeah. Y'all came away with an 11-2 win. You bagged five goals that game.
Yeah, as I say that, I'm like, well, I scored more, but I think I was just getting more confident, or I was just like, you know, I should just start shooting.
And then from that, the Bahamas was still in the group stage, and that game was a lot closer. Yeah.
That was really close.
The game was 3-2.
We wasted all our goals on on Bonaire and Antigua. Oh, I did score two goals against them, though. Against Bahamas.
Yeah, so but the Bahamas score ended up being 3-2. Y'all win 2-2. You ended up having two goals yourself. And for me personally, I felt like the one beautiful bike you had that had like two or three Bahamas players around you, I would have liked to have seen that one on ESPN. But definitely walked away with, I'm sure, feeling good out of the group stages, winning all three games. And then you guys progressed to a game against Guadalupe, I believe.
El Salvador in the semifinals. And essentially, the mentality going to this, can you tell me a little bit what that looks like? I'd imagine y'all are thinking in your heads, like, we win this game, we're going to the World Cup.
Yeah, exactly. I think I was on an interview, actually, after the Guadalupe game, and the guy asked me, like, are you guys confident in going to the World Cup? And I just, like, stared at the camera, like, deadpan, like, yeah, we're going. Come on.
And for those of you who are listening, and the top two teams of this tournament go. So if you make it to the finals, you're going to the World Cup.
Exactly. And we have not qualified for the last two rounds. That's like the last time we've been in the World Cup was 2013. So that was a little bit of pressure, I guess, also.
You're going into the game knowing that it's not going to be like a BOE game. It's not going to be like an Antigua game. It'll probably, if anything, more closer to a Bahamas game where it was 3-2 winning by one goal.
Yeah, but this one kid, he actually got a young player of the tournament. If I did what he did in that game, I would have gotten young player of the tournament for sure. And I just like think that's a really good accomplishment. It's like almost sad for him that they didn't qualify because of how well he played, and he hit one of the dirtiest bikes I think I've seen in international competition on us.
So based off that, kind of playing against some players that you've at least seen in competition before, the game gets heated all the way down to the final whistle of the third period, and then y'all head into PKs.
PK shootout. I've never seen this before, but these guys were laying on the sand. The whole other team were laying on the sand. So they're like thinking this thing. It was almost like they'd already given up or something, or maybe they're praying, but. I mean, all I could think was, like, just don't miss, man. Don't miss. Weddle scores the goal, or scores the PK, and we look over at them, and no one wants to take the PK.
The fifth one.
On the Salvador team. I've never seen that. Yeah, I've never seen that. Well, actually, they were already doing it on, like, number three, but, like, no one on the team wanted to, like, take the PKs. It was, like, they don't want to be the person to miss, basically, or something like that, like. Or is some it was almost it was crazy how much like they did.
So for people that are listening, also the behind the net, there's just a crowd of people, if I remember correctly. Like, are you looking into a goalie and a crowd of people?
Yeah, that's true too. I guess I've never thought about that distinction between beach and outfield. Soccer is like that. You have fans.
So you're going up with the ball to set up a mound in the sand to get ready to place for your penalty kick, and you're not only looking at the goalie of the opposing team, but then behind them is a mountain of fans. I would imagine not many of which were in favor of the U.S. winning.
Let me think. I guess they had some Salvador fans, but Mexico and Salvador have, like, this rivalry, so sometimes they go for us. But anyways, sidebar, you should see what they do in Brazil sometimes. Like, they have everybody, like, lined up as close as they can get to the PK without impeding the goal. Like, you should see these videos of, like, 100 people, like, or 200 people, like, a crowd of people just around PKs.
I'm intimidated just by thinking about that.
Especially when it's like out on the beach and like in the, you can tell it's like out on the beach in the boondocks somewhere. And there's like hundreds of people surrounding like two teams, like inside of like 12 yards is the only like open space, you know, or maybe less, 9 yards. What is it, 9 meters insane. Or something? Yeah, pretty crazy.
So then we pull it out.
But anyways, these guys were laying on the ground, and the last dude chips the ball. And I think he, like, hits the crossbar, or skims the crossbar or something, and we just go crazy and tackle. The whole team tackled Chris Toth, I think. Francis got flipped. All types of crazy shit happened in the dog pile, but that was pretty fun.